My name is Arlene, and I'm a grateful recovering addict. I'd like to first thank the Chesapeake Potomac region for asking an addict like me to share my experience, strength, and hope. They gave me the topic, why are we here? And I'm going to tell y'all, when they gave me the topic, the very first thing I began to do was try to figure out how I could make sense of that thing so somebody can understand it. But then, you know what I'm saying, writing it down and reading it over and over and over, God had other plans for me. So when I finally made it here, first I need to let y'all know that I'm a nervous wreck. And I thank God for Jimmy here, right, who said it's okay. See, because I'm a virgin up in this camp right here, right? And this is my first time. But I need to let y'all know that this past 30 days has been one hell of a journey for me. Right on March 19th, I celebrated 8 years. On April the 10th, I celebrated my 47th birthday. On April the 10th, we buried my sister-in-law. Right prior to that, I realized that my son has a problem too. Right, so when I come here, I'm full of emotions, man. When I come here, I have to think about, you know what I'm saying, how am I going to just share this message of hope that you guys have shared to me. And I'm trying to think, you know what I'm saying, when you say, you know, why am I here? I could not manage my life. I could not manage my feelings, right? But I come here today, man, when I could have been home. You know what I'm saying? I could have been somewhere else isolated, right? Because I feel so fucked. Right, but when I came here, man, you know, in spite of, you know what I'm saying, feeling like, you know, I should be at home with my husband who I left there. You know what I'm saying? And I need to let y'all know that I know my husband isn't feeling well. Right, and I don't want to be thinking like I was thinking once before with my first husband when I got into treatment. I'm telling you why I'm here and how I had to learn how to change my behaviors and deal with my feelings without picking up a drug or without picking up anything else. When I first came around here and they put me in another center for 8.5 months. 3 weeks after I got out of there, my first husband passed away as a direct result of this disease. Now, and I'm telling you, I couldn't go home after I got out of treatment. You know how they say, I love you, but you can't come back here. So the door was closed for me back at home, right? And so I had to find somewhere else to go. And I need to let you know that while I was sitting in this place, man, I sat there for 6 months before I took the cotton out my ears and before I began to hear a message of hope and recovery. When somebody sat on the other side of the table and they told me that we're only as sick as our secrets. Right, and I sat there all pained up. I didn't think nobody could identify with me, man. Because me, I was the worst person in the whole wide world. Every time I thought about the shit that I went through, man. Every time I thought about the positions that I kept placing myself in. You know what I'm saying? They say we are our worst enemies. Right, when I had an opportunity to stop with the dope and to stop with the coke and I no longer had the alcohol, man. When it stripped away and I had to take a look at myself, I didn't know what to do with myself. So y'all told me to keep coming back anyhow, right? And I sat up in there on my hands, you know what I'm saying? I didn't know how to get the hell back home, you know what I'm saying? Even though it was a highway and I knew how to stick my thumb out, but I didn't know whether to go east, west, north or south, you know what I'm saying, right? So I sat on my hands there, you know what I mean? They say, you know, don't go upstairs without adult supervision, right? And I'm telling you, man, I found a relationship with a higher power once I sat in there, man, because I knew not what else to do. You know what I'm saying, man? I mean, there's something about when you keep thinking about the shit that you did and the people that you hurt and the positions that you kept finding yourself in, man. And when I kept thinking about the things that I had done to get here and to earn this motherfucking seat, right? I'm telling you, I didn't know what else to do. I no longer had the coke and shit. You know what I'm saying? I no longer had the dope and everything. What am I going to do now with my feelings, right? And I'm talking about when I was up in this place, they trying to teach me how to take care of my damn kids, right? And I'm like, I ain't never been to a PTA meeting before. My mama didn't raise me in no damn PTA meeting. What do you mean I gotta teach my children and bring them to a PTA meeting? I'm telling you, you know, we do recover around here, right? With or without your permission, right? And so I kept coming back, man, but I'm telling you, once I got outside of there, they said, Now the living begins. I'm talking about if I didn't have that moment of time, I don't know about you, but I was an addict that I know in 28 days I wouldn't have made it up in there. I had to stay there for 8.5 months with 3 children, man, smoking that shit just like me. Why are we here, man? I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, my understanding, right? I decided that I wanted to change my behavior, every single thing that was going on wrong with me that made me feel like shit. Right, and I'm going to tell you something, you know what I'm saying? I had to think about, this is just my story, right? I'm talking about, I remember as a little girl, see, it's something about when they talk about, yeah, you need to get in touch with everything. And I remember getting in touch with the incest, right? And I remember how long it went on, you know what I'm saying? And in recovery, you know, I had to learn how to forgive my mother for the things that she did and the things that she did not do. You know what I'm saying? I had to learn how to forgive myself, you know what I'm saying? That sometimes, even being a victim, you still gotta say it's all right, man. I am no longer a victim to incest. I am a survivor of incest, and I'm A-okay with that shit. I don't run around trying to shelter my kids, you understand, right? Because if I try to shelter my kids too damn much, man, I'm creating some monsters, okay? So my kids gotta learn how to be sociable, okay? Right? But I remember, man, I remember how I blamed, you know what I'm saying, my mother for the things that my stepdaddy was doing to me, okay? Right, but how about when you start catching feelings, right? How about when you start feeling like, you know, maybe this is okay when you're with him, right? How about this is all you know when they telling you that they love you, right? Because he always took me to King's Dominion. I don't know about y'all, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm talking about, right? He always rode me piggyback on his back. He made the best damn spaghetti and meatballs I ever had. You know what I'm saying? And I love this man. But I'm going to tell you how I had a problem with boundaries. You know what I'm saying? So when I came around here, I wanted to change my behaviors. I no longer wanted to practice the same old fucked up behaviors that got me up in here. Because down the line, by and by, I continued to break the boundaries that everybody else says normal. When I began to sleep with people that was way younger than me, you don't need to know all that, right? But however, right, when I began to sleep with them, and when I began to sleep with anybody's man, and when I began to sleep with anybody's woman and everything, you know what I'm saying? I had a problem, you know what I'm saying? And for me, I had to keep chasing something that was going to make me feel better and forget what the hell I did, man. I'm talking about the feelings of humiliation and the feelings of guilt that I had to deal with when I came up in here. You taught me, man, about freedom. I no longer have to chase something just to get rid of some feelings, man. It's okay for me to feel what I'm feeling, okay? Right? And it's okay for me to feel what I'm feeling here, but I'm going to tell you again, when I came around here and I had 3 weeks out of a treatment center, and when they told me that my husband was in the hospital, that he had OD'd and was in a coma, and I had time to get down there to the hospital and hold his hand and tell him, don't put him on the machines no more, right? And I sat there and I held his pulse until the last beat, right? And then I was thinking, See, my husband always wanted to come up there to the treatment center with me and with the kids, right? But I said, if you want to come up here, you got to make it up here on your own. See, because I was the type of addict that took care of my husband, right? I was the type of addict that I provided for him. You know what I'm saying? So when I came up here, and then when my husband had passed away, I had to deal with the guilt, you know what I'm saying, thinking that it was my fault, because if I had just let him come up there with me, maybe he wouldn't have died. But I realized today, you can't save nobody, right? And so I just kept coming back, man, and I remember it was around Christmas time. It was around Christmas time, and I'm crying in the rooms, you know what I'm saying? I'm telling people, you know what I mean? I don't know what to do. I had no family up here. I just got there. And I remember somebody offering to buy my family a Christmas tree, right? And the very first thing I wanted to do was thank him with my ass. I knew nothing else. And that brother loved me enough to say, no, you don't owe me nothing. This is just what we do around here. And for real, that was the first sweet instance of Narcotics Anonymous for me. Because when I first started coming into the room trying to get this thing, that y'all said was a shot of hope, and I kept coming up in here day after day, right, getting those 24-hour keychains. And I would raise my hand and get that 24-hour keychain. And I would see y'all up here with some weight on your asses. And I saw y'all up here with your bling bling on. And with your hair done. And I would sit in the back of that room and raise my hand and get that keychain. And for me, my first experience was nobody held my hand. Nobody asked me, where you going at after this little girl? That's my first experience, day after day. And I realized today that I'm not that type of person. I kept coming back. When I see a newcomer come up in the rooms, I'm going to love them. I want to know where. Come on and go with me. Do you have a phone number? Where you going? What you doing? Right, I try to keep a newcomer with me at all times. Right, lest I forget, man, I don't want to get it twisted. I don't want to treat people the way I was treated when I first came up into the rooms, man. My perception had changed. My perception had changed, man. And I'm telling you, I'm a student of this thing. Right, and as long as I have breath in me, I'm going to continue to try to learn this thing, man, because I haven't arrived. I'm going to keep trying to work on me. And so I'm telling you that when I left my husband down there, I got the same fucking feelings. Am I leaving him just like I left my other husband to come up into this damn convention? Because I'm concerned about him, and I know he wasn't feeling well. I'm concerned about him. And I'm like, in the beginning, maybe I need to back it up. In the beginning, I didn't want my husband to come up here, okay? I wanted to be up here with my sisters and my girls. I said, I'm going to chase this thing like my life depended on it. And my husband like, I'm going too. I'm not with me, you not. You, if you want this thing, you got to get up here just like anybody else. See, because I'm going to tell y'all, right, habitually, I wore the ding-a-ling, all right? Habitually, from growing up, I didn't know what it was that a man's supposed to do in a household. You see what I'm saying? In my family, the women did all the shit. So I grew up. I'm going to replace the emptiness that I thought a man's supposed to have in my life. I'm going to provide, I'm going to tell you what to do, I'm going to do everything. So I'm carrying a ding-a-ling, and I need to let y'all know that motherfucker don't fit. Because I'm telling you, I set myself up for a whole lot of pain when I tried to be the man in a man's household. Oh, my God put the right man in my life. I could not. It's hard to surrender and let go of some shit that you didn't even know you had a problem with. That you can't even say that this is a character defect. It wasn't a principle. Trying to tell my man what to do is not a principle. Because I figure, number one, I make more money than you. Right? And even though you got more education than me, I know a little more than you do. And I found so many different reasons. I'm telling you, some of the shit that I had carried with me into the recovery process was the characteristics that my mother had. And it's something about identifying the characteristics of somebody else and when you implement them in your own life. So I wonder why none of the women in my family had no men, okay? Right, but then I wonder why I kept chasing them away too. Right, and always putting them away because if you can't do what I tell you to do, I don't need you in my life. Why are we here? I remember just a year ago when I celebrated. And I'm telling you, when it talked about jails, institutions of death, prior to coming here, I had been in a different institution over 30 times. Yeah, I'm dual diagnosed. Right, but as a direct result of me not being able to deal with my feelings and everything, I go to places that I could, you know what I'm saying, they don't know shit about me. And I sit up there and lie, manipulate, and you give me a pill to change the way I feel about myself. And how about that shit manifested itself in me? That's why I'm nervous and that's why I can't keep still. When I tried to check out other institutions, other fellowships, they tell me that this is a spiritual program, so I can go anywhere where some spirituality being practiced. You tell me that we don't talk about some things up in here. It's about saving my damn ass and not my face. I can say any damn thing I want to say up in here. You see what I'm saying? Because when I walked up in here, I walked up in sick and alone. I can't please nobody else, man. As long as I live, man, I'll never be able to please you. So I gotta do the best thing for me so that I'm gonna be okay. And in the past year, when I celebrated, I called myself going to another fellowship just to heighten my relationship with the God of my understanding. And then they told me we don't talk about that up in here. I'm like, well, where the hell you come from? What kind of God is it that you serving? Because the last time I checked, my God talked about unconditional love. I get on the phone with you and you talking about because I cuss, you can't talk to me. So it wasn't enough just to practice that program, right? So I came back up into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous with my ass on fire. Bent over and I could barely speak. And I told you before that I was working on a character defect, the control in my man and my household, right? So I'm telling my man, if he don't get his shit together, and if he don't do this and he don't do that, he ain't getting none of this right here. And I need to let you ladies know, you hold it back, yes, he's going to get it wherever the fuck he can. And a part of me me was not really controlling the situation. I dared your ass. You understand? I dare you to go and do what you think you're going to do. I know you ain't going to do that shit to me. You want some, don't you? Right? And I remember a little bird told me, right? Thank you. A little bird told me that something else was going on. Mine, I'm still being done, and I'm not, trust me, check this out. I'm not trying to cause assassinate nobody because I'm telling you about my feelings. I'm telling you about my story. I'm telling you about how I reacted to a situation, right? So this little bird said, your man was somebody else. And something tapped me and said, hold on, more will be revealed. And one night in the middle of the night, I just came from a wonderful women's meeting. And I got a phone call. And I'm thinking it's one of my sisters. And I'm listening to this sister. And I hear her pain because, see, I get with sisters that hear my pain, man, who I get naked with, okay? So I hear this pain and I'm like, I'm NA all the way. She said, is he there with you? Who? I need to let y'all know that bipolar came out of me like it wasn't shit. And I saw red. And I need to let y'all know that that was the greatest pains, one of the greatest pains that I ever felt in my motherfucking life. And how tore up I was. And how I couldn't go to work. And how I couldn't see nobody. And then I made no disrespect when I found out it was a white woman. That shit came out of me, you dumb motherfucker. And it's something about every time you lay down, man, all you can do is imagine that shit over and over and over and over again. And it's something about how you feel like you just want to kill somebody for real. I'm going to take this charge. Because I didn't know what else to do with my feelings. Y'all let me back up in this cat. And I'm going to tell you, I practice the principle of forgiveness. See, because I learned that I love my husband unconditionally. And no matter what comes down the pipe, just because I get hurt over here, don't mean I gotta go find some new John to make me feel fucking better. I practice these principles in all of my affairs to the best of my ability. I learn to stick and stay around here no matter how I'm feeling. I know I got a problem, man. I know I got a problem that sometimes when something comes down the pipe, the very first thing you want to do is run. Run or use, man. But I had to go through what I had to go through. So when I had the opportunity to come up there with some sisters, and I'm telling you about the therapeutic value of one added helping another is without parallel. You sisters loved me up in this camp. I learned how to deal with my feelings, man. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes on one side, the citizens are saying, you need to leave. You need to leave. What am I going to do, man? I don't fool myself. The grass ain't always greener on the other side. See, I'm in this thing for real because when I got a relationship with the God of my understanding, man, he started manifesting some things in my life. Right? I don't know what tomorrow holds, right? And an addict like me would try to manipulate tomorrow because I remember getting up every morning, right, with a plan on about how am I going to get out there and get one more. So if this shit went down the pipe, what am I supposed to do? Go shake it like it's hot? No, I'd rather be home with my husband. I'd rather be home with my husband. It's something about loving somebody, man. I can't even describe it. And practicing these principles, man. Why am I here? Because I made a decision that no matter what, I'm going to stay clean. And no matter what, I'm going to work this thing to the best of my ability. Right? My change ain't going to come if I don't participate in it. If I don't put my faith, hope, and trust in the God of my understanding. When he sends the helicopter and when he sends the boat, I need to be listening. I'm sitting around and I'm waiting. Right? They say, you know what I'm saying? Right? Everybody, you got a season. And I got my season and it's been a long ride. It's been a long ride. But I'd rather do it in a program of Narcotics Anonymous than die as a fucking humble on the street, man. I'd rather be up in here, scared, afraid, shaking, about to fall out, than to be out there, man, sucking and tricking one more time. I got a brand new lease on life. And I'm going for the ride and I'm going for the journey. This is the best thing that has ever happened to me. And I'm going to keep riding this thing, man. I don't know about what tomorrow holds. I stay in the here and the now. Right? I can't do shit about yesterday because yesterday is gone. No control over the future. I only have just for today. Why are we here? My name is Arlene and I'll keep coming back.
I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Jimmy from Montgomery County.
Hey, everybody, I'm Jimmy. I'm an addict.
Hey, Jimmy.
And I want to thank the CMP region for having me come and share my experience, strength, and hope on why are we here. And I want to thank Arlene for a great share. I don't know if I can follow that one. I tell you, it was powerful. before coming to the fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. You know, that explains it right there for me. The choices that I made through my addiction, you know, somebody else managed my life. They told me when to get up in the morning, when to go to sleep, when to eat. You know, when I could go out to gym, when I could do whatever, and I'm talking about jail, you know, and that's, you know, and that's where I was, you know, before I got here, in and out of jail. I couldn't stop using no matter what, you know, and it'd been like that a long time, you know. I first started experiencing consequences from using in the early 70s. You know, I had gotten busted for heroin, sales, felony sales in D.C., I mean, felony possession in D.C. and sales in Montgomery County. And, you know, back then there was no N.A. in the Washington metropolitan area. So if you were an addict and you needed help, you know, and you want to try to get out of jail, you went into long-term treatment, therapeutic community. That's what they had. 2 year, 3 year commitment. You know what I mean? You know, and if you left prematurely, you went back to jail and served your time. You know, so I opted out, and you know, actually, I did pretty good from 71 to 73. You know, I learned how to follow direction, and you know, learned a lot about myself, and. You know, had been clean for, you know, a period of years. And, you know, my life seemed to be getting better. But back then it was very different. Us addicts, you know, we thought different about addiction. You know, it was, you know, you had to stay away from the heroin, cocaine, PCP, but it was okay to drink. You know what I mean? And I got out of... I got out of this treatment program in 73, and, you know, alcohol became a drug of my choice, you know, and I witnessed it for a whole lot of people. And it was just a short time before I deviated back to, you know, the heart of drugs, and my life became a mess again, you know. I picked up right where I left off when I started using. Actually, about a week after I got out of there. I was out in California, and I got loaded. And you know, I picked up right where I left off. I was on top of a pharmacy trying to break in, and you know, set the alarm off, and got out of there. And the next morning, man, I couldn't believe what I had done. You know what I mean? I didn't think drugs had anything to do with it, tell you the truth. You know what I mean? but, you know, I carried on. It didn't stop, you know. I lived to use and used to live, you know, in and out of jail, putting my life at risk and in danger every day. You know, it became a way of life for me. You know, it says we could not live and enjoy life as other people do, you know. This addict felt different than you people. I felt like I had to use, you know. I had to have something in me. You know, I was chemically imbalanced or whatever the terms were. You know, I just needed to get something in me. And, you know, I tried switching from one drug to the other and, you know, became physically addicted to drugs most people in this room have never heard of before. You know what I mean? You know, thinking that I wouldn't have the same results. Guess what? The same results. You know what I mean? You know, and I would wake up sick, you know, for whatever I was addicted to. You know, shortly before I came in the rooms, I was locked up. I was kicking a habit. And, you know, my roommate, my cellmate, you know, he didn't know what to think. I was on the shitter, naked with a towel wrapped around me, freezing 1 minute, sweating the next minute, the same color bile coming out of both ends of me at the same time, you know. And right when I said, it can't get any worse than this, the guard knocked on the door and says, "Hey, man, we don't have no more toilet paper." You know what I mean? So don't say it can't get worse, you know. I like to remember that every time my disease thinking starts to get me to glamorize my using. You know, I need to think of those days, you know. And the lengths we went to use and how we felt. You know, when I was growing up, you know, hey man, you know, low self-esteem like we all suffer from. You know, I had learning disabilities. I always felt less than. I felt inadequate. And when I used drugs, it changed the way I felt. You know what I mean? And I liked that, you know. I liked to get numb. You know, I didn't like to feel. So I became a heroin addict as a young teenager, you know. And that's where my life was, you know. You know, I had a child when I was a teenager, and my mother used to say, yeah, out of sight, out of mind. And that's true to some extent, you know, because I was an unavailable dad, and I was a deadbeat dad. I didn't want to pay no money. I didn't want to be responsible for that child. And, you know, it was out of sight, out of mind, but that isn't always true. You know, when you aren't a responsible parent, you know, you harbor a lot of shame and guilt, you know, and I carried that, you know, with me for a long time. I just felt horrible about myself, you know, and it says in the literature here, through our inability to accept personal responsibility, we were actually creating our own problems. You know, and there were a lot of problems, you know, from that not wanting to take personal responsibility. And it carried on through my life, man. I was financially unstable, you know, emotionally unavailable, you know, and didn't want to take responsibility for anything that happened. You know, all the trouble I got in, it was either so-and-so set me up, you know, or I was having some bad luck. You know what I mean? It's all right, you know. And look, in 1980, I had gone back to the public defender's office. I had a friend of mine, you know, there, and I had a bunch of charges, man, armed robbery and all kinds of shit. And he said, Jimmy, man, you know, you need some help. And I said, well, it's not that bad, John. He said, look at your hands. They look like boxing gloves, you know. He said, you're a mess, man, you know. And I said, no, John, let me tell you, man, it's really not that bad. You know, denial, you know, will keep us sick, you know, and keep us from asking for help. And I had a strong case of denial. I just, like I said, just thought it was some bad luck I had. Well, that bad luck lasted a long time, you know what I mean? I couldn't shake it, you know. And there was a lot of pain and misery from my addiction, you know. And I was unavailable for family members and, you know, anything that happened. I remember I was on the lam in Florida. My mother sent me some money to come back up here to Maryland and to be in my brother's wedding, you know. Man, I couldn't wait. I took the bus from Florida all the way up here. I couldn't wait to go to the dope man's house. Man, I couldn't wait. I got all the way up here. First thing I did is got loaded. Guess what? I missed my brother's wedding. You know what I mean? But that's, you know, that was a, you know, a day in the life of Jimmy the Addict. You know, it didn't get better, you know. I'd heard that, you know, people were getting better in NA, you know, that, you know, it works. And I would hear little trickles and things. When I was locked up, I remember friends of mine were going to NA meeting, and I used to say, that shit don't work for you, man. That shit don't work for us, you know. As soon as you get out on the bricks, you'll be back doing what you do. You know, you're a fenarino. You're a drug addict. That's just what we do, you know. We shoot dope and rob people. You know what I mean? you know, and you know, it was I had a very sarcastic and skewed way of thinking about things, you know. In reality, I was hopeless, you know. I didn't think anything could work for me. You know, I thought I had tried. I'd given it a bunch of shots. And a part of me thought I could stop, you know, whenever I want. I just don't want to stop now, you know. crazy things that we tell each other. But I did put my life in risk, and I thank God, you know, that I'm here today, and I thank God that, you know, I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous through an institution I was in. You know, it seemed it was a changing point of my life. You know, I was in treatment, in a 28-day treatment program, the local, local hospital, and all I had to do was complete this 28-day treatment program, and I didn't have to go back to jail for 4 years. You know what I mean? And I couldn't do that. I was using, you know, I'd have the package delivered every night, you know, I'd beat the urine tests, and, you know, it was some crazy stuff, and that's when I learned the lesson of powerlessness. Here I am in a rehab, you know, institution, I can't even stop using in this, you know. And it was a part of me that thought I really needed to go back to jail because I could do that. I knew I could do that, but, you know, staying clean like these people are doing and, you know, accepting life on life's terms and the reality of, you know, the mess that we got ourselves in, I didn't think I could do that. But, you know, there's a lot of hope in these rooms, and there are a lot of people, you know, we encouraged a newcomer to keep coming back, and they did that for me. You know, I stopped using in the rehab. It was a funny thing. There's a woman at the convention, and she was making coffee, and there was a big meeting in that hospital, and she used to make the coffee for the hospital, and for the meeting, and it was like three of those big, gigantic coffee urns, you know, and it took like hours to make, and she was emptying them out up in the rehab where we were, and she was trying to get us to, you know, to help with making coffee, you know, and, you know, I was still using, you know, and I was like, I ain't making coffee for them drug addicts, shit, you don't want me to make coffee, I'll pee in the coffee like I did in jail in the Kool-Aid, you know, let them drink that, you know. And, you know, I put Jimmy special sauce in the coffee. Damn, you don't want me making it. But I got to tell you, when the turning point came and the program became attractive, I got a service position. You know, I started making that coffee. And because I didn't want nobody putting anything in it, I was drinking, you know. And it was one of them coffee, because that's how we learn responsibility, you know. That's how we start feeling good about ourselves. We do esteemable things, man. And I knew that if the speaker didn't show up, they get another speaker. If the secretary didn't show up, they get another. Somebody would step in. If the coffee maker doesn't show up, oh, there'd be hating going on that night in that meeting. You know what I mean? So they explained to me, this is a very important service position. And I had a sponsor that was the supervisor of that hospital, the maintenance supervisor. And I'd get so mad, you know, because the coffee pot, you know, those big, great big coffee pots, they would blow the fuses out in all the outlets. You know, and so I had to carry the three different coffee pots up and down the hallway, sticking them in all the outlets. And, man, I would wear that phone out at night because he'd come on at like 11 o'clock at night. And I go, what's wrong with this hospital you work at, man? This is your responsibility to keep blowing the fuses in this hospital. And he'd say, calm down, Jimmy. It's just overloading, you know, the circuit, and it's okay, man. You know, just keep making the coffee. Everything's going to be all right, you know. But I did, I took that those service positions very seriously, you know, and I felt good about it, you know. And that was my first service position, you know. And what I didn't share is that I went from not wanting this thing to become willing to do whatever I needed to do to get this thing, you know what I mean, and especially they talked in the literature, says that after coming to NA, we realized that we were sick people. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I thought I was crazy, but I knew normal people didn't do the things that I did. You know what I mean? And when they said, you know, we're sick people, we're not bad people trying to get good, we're sick people trying to get well. You know, I said, damn, yeah, they're right. You know, I like that. I went with that. You know, so a lot of the literature, you know, became, and it still is, very important to me. You know what? I kicked that habit. You know, by the time I was ready to get out of the rehab, I was going through withdrawal. You know, and they kept saying, keep coming back, keep coming back. But what I didn't share is that, you know, they took us to the meeting, that big meeting on a Friday night, you know, and I was really at an end at my bottom because I couldn't stop using. I was in rehab and all that. And they took us to a meeting that changed the course of my life, you know, because I saw addicts that used like I did, that suffered like I did, and were willing to share about it, you know. And they told me, if you want what we got, you do what we do. And we don't use, no matter what, we don't use. And we come to meetings, and we get a sponsor, you know, and we pray our ass off. That night I went upstairs, and I had the drugs in my pocket, you know, and I got down on my hands and knees, and I asked for help, man. And you know what? Something just came over me like everything was going to be all right, and I threw the drugs in the toilet. The next morning when I woke up and I was in withdrawal, I thought I had lost my mind. I had thrown my drugs away. You know, what has gotten into me? You know what I mean? I was like, oh my God, they're brainwashing me, man. I never throw my stuff away. You know, I got down back down on my hands and knees and asked my HP for help, and the same thing came over me. Everything's going to be all right. You know what? It was all right, you know, and it has been all right throughout my recovery. I've had ups and downs, you know. I suffer illness and loss, but you know, I've become the person I wanted to be. You know what I mean? I'm as responsible as I can possibly be, that I think I can be. You know, I'm the father to my daughter, you know, who's 38, and I'm the grandfather to my grandkids, and now, you know, life changes, man. You never know what to expect. You never know what's gonna, you know, come your way. And I've been blessed with a new wife, and who I love dearly, and a 2-year-old, and now 2-month-old. So there's a 38-year difference between my kids, because my youngest one and my oldest one, you know. And I got to tell you, it is all good, man. It is. I love my kids to death, you know what I mean? Oh, they just bring me so much joy. And for so much of my recovery, I didn't want kids. I was like, I don't want any kids anymore. I'm done with having kids. You never know, you know what I mean? You never know. You know, service work has been a big part of my recovery. You know, it's funny, I got clean and, you know, I was learning responsibility. My sponsor told me, look, don't live outside your means, you know, just learn how to pay your bills and things like that. And I started doing that. You know, it's funny, as addicts, as we go along, you know, we start getting mail, you know what I mean? And we get applications for credit cards, you know what I mean? Them credit cards start coming in, you know. And then we learn a whole different lesson about financial instability, you know what I mean? You know, but I got help with that in these rooms, you know what I mean? Rip up them credit cards, and you won't be buying stuff you don't have, you know. And I had to learn those lessons. You know, both my parents have died, you know, passed since I've been clean. And the one thing I can say is you know, because of NA and because of my higher power and the fellowship, I was able to be available for my parents before they passed, you know, and that meant, you know, means a lot to me, you know, because I was unavailable to everybody and anything. I didn't care about family, friends, you know, I just cared about Jimmy getting high, getting loaded, you know, that's all I cared about. And today is very different, man, it's very different. You know, the responsibility that I have in my life is, you know, from the choices that I make, and I make them willing because I love doing what I'm doing, man. My life is rich and full today, you know. It was tough, you know, throughout my recovery. I got clean in 1987, 7/27/87. NA was a little different back then, you know. But you know, it got me clean. It's kept me clean, and it's pretty much the same as it is today. You know, the face has changed, but the message is still the same. I've been able to do things in recovery that, you know, it's funny because for so much of my recovery, I worked a job that I really never shared about in recovery because, I don't know, I felt uncomfortable about it. I didn't want to brag what I did. I didn't want to make it my recovery program. I really valued my sponsees and my sponsor and the fellowship and stuff. But my colleagues and I opened a homeless shelter, you know, and I worked there 18 years. You know, it was a great place. It was a great opportunity for me to learn a lot, you know, and we helped a lot of people, man. You know, we helped a lot of people on the way. I had a lot of fun doing, and that was my passion. You know, I didn't make much money there, but the benefits and the gifts and rewards that I got from watching people stay clean, you know, was worth all the hard work, you know, I made a decision a few years ago, to retire from that job, you know, and it was so much a part of my life, and it was my passion, you know. I learned a passion for helping people, you know, but I don't miss it. You know what I mean? My career's changed. I'm a stay-at-home dad. I love my job, you know. I tell you one thing. It's the hardest damn job I ever had in my life. You know, I didn't know that, but y'all in here with kids, y'all know that. You know, I didn't know that, you know, but it is one of the hardest jobs I've ever had in my life. You know, I'm sleep deprived right now, you know. Man, I got a 2-month-old, wakes up all hours of the night and stuff. My wife, 4 o'clock this morning, bam, your turn. You know what I mean? And the 2-year-old wakes up. Yeah, but it's all good. It's all good, I got to tell you. Even though I have a lot going on in my life, a lot of family and stuff, I still find the opportunity to be able to sponsor a bunch of people, you know. And 5 of us went down to a meeting last night. You know, it was great. You know, I love me some newcomers. I gotta tell you, they keep me laughing. Oh my God, they got all the answers, don't they? They got all the big ideas. Last night, and I'll try to do this often, but sometimes, you know, you gotta cut people off. But the new guy I took to a meeting last night, after the guy led the meeting, he was like a racehorse coming out the gate. You know, he was. Got his hand up, they call on him, and he just launches into his whole, the long version of his story, you know what I mean? Everybody's looking at each other, like 5 minutes go by, he's still on the beginning, you know, he got another 45 minutes to talk, you know? Finally, I had to lean over, I said, come on, man, you got to speed this up some, you know. He's like, oh, okay, thanks for letting me share, you know. It was good after the meeting. You know, I heard him on the cell phone. He said, he was talking to somebody, he said, you're not going to believe it. They cut me off again, you know. He thought it was funny as hell, you know. You know, but when you're new in NA, we do want to hear from you. We love you. It's what keeps us clean. We do want to hear. We want to hear from you, you know. But we want to hear that you're learning to listen and listen to learn, too. You know what I mean? You know, we want the short versions, like the, you know, two-minute versions of what's going on with you, you know. But it, you know, it's all good. I talked about the denial that I was in for so many years. You know, I couldn't get honest with myself. But when I started coming to meetings and I saw people sharing from their heart, man, and they were talking exactly about the things that I felt, you know, about, that I would never share to anybody. You know what I mean? I would never admit the things, you know, that were going on in my life that I heard in this, you know, this meeting. And, you know, and I asked the guy before he became my sponsor, I said, man, what's up with that? They be telling on themselves and stuff. You know, and he said, Jimmy, that's what they have to do to stay clean, man. You know what I mean? You got to talk about it, you know. Man, I tell you, when I had the opportunity to share about, you know, my life and where drugs had taken me and, you know, the pain, and when I could admit that, man, it was a big relief off my shoulders, man, because, you know, I was from the school where you don't share any of your feelings about anything. You toughed it out. You know what I mean? You don't talk about that stuff, man. You don't admit defeat. You know, we're soldiers. Yeah. You know, I had a doctor one time. He said to me, you know, your body is like a battlefield. And I said, yeah. And he says, and you've lost a lot of soldiers, you know what I mean? And I remember that when I got here. I was like, oh, man, yeah, the war's over. I lost, you know. But, you know, I found freedom like we do in these rooms, man. We admit defeat, you know. We break through the denial. We surrender, you know. Coming to terms with the reality of where my life was when I was new was a painful experience. You know, I didn't have any education. I didn't have any skills. You know, I remember I was making $4.50 an hour. You know, and I'd call my sponsor. I'd go, I hate this job. You know, I hate this life. It's just so painful. You know, he said, are you paying your bills? I said, yeah. He goes, well, you're in the right place, man. Stop complaining. You know, suck it up. You know, you're paying your rent. And, you know, and I didn't need any money. You know, But I started feeling better about myself, like I talked about earlier. You know, by doing service work and getting involved in NA and, you know, feeling a part of this thing instead of apart from this thing, you know. It has been my salvation. You know, I'm not going to preach or anything like that, but, you know, this program has, you know, saved my life, you know, as it does for a lot of us, you know. I feel bad for people, you know, that can't get it. You know, I help a lot of people. You know, but I know I can't control my disease. I can't control their disease. I'm just not that powerful. You know, I have to admit that to myself. I want to shake some people sometime. You know what I mean? You know, but I can't fight with this disease. It'll kick my ass like it had did before, even me trying to control somebody else's disease. Anyway, with that, I'm about finished. The more time you get, the less you seem to know. And that's about all I know. Thanks for letting me share.